Hello and welcome back to week two of the Creepercast. What's going on in Maine? I have no idea. What are we calling this series?
This is it. This would actually be week one, but
oh, that's right, because last week it had nothing to do with Maine, did it?
Yeah, no, not at all. It had a lot to do with Paris, but
that's right.
Maybe yeah. Paris, Maine. I don't know. No, this would actually be. I'm calling this series. It is a three-part series called "It Came from Maine," because it was, as far as everybody knows, the only thing that ever came from Maine was Stephen King and all those wonderful creepy stories.
But as Mike calls him, his Uncle Steve.
Yeah. And I'm here to tell you, there's a lot more coming from the land of Stephen King. We're going to talk about a couple of those films right now. Today, in this particular show, some of you may already be visiting creepercast.com and reading some of the reviews that go up there. If you're not, you should definitely go read the review, watch the trailer for this movie, for these movies that we are going to talk about. Today, we are going to talk about How to Kill a Zombie, because everybody needs to know the correct way of doing so. And one of the things I love most about this movie is that there are some creative ways of killing zombies.
Bowling
and
balls.
Not actually killing them.
Bubble wrap.
Bowling.
Yeah. Bubble wrap, my favorite.
Bubble wrap was like, you know, I don't want to give away too much about the bubble wrap because I think it's one of the best parts of the whole film. But yes, bubble wrap, everybody. Bubble wrap.
We're not going to tell you how, why, or whatever. Just bubble wrap. When the zombie apocalypse comes, I am going down to like Staples.
And grabbing large quantities of bubble wrap.
And grabbing large, like that's gonna be my armor. Forget like, you know, wrapping.
Oh yeah, there you go.
You know how everybody talks about, you know, what's your armor going to be in the zombie? You know, you gotta make sure that you put like stuff around your elbow or your forearms, you know, and stuff. And I'm like, you know what? Forget that. I'm wrapping myself up in bubble wrap.
There you go. No, I can see it now.
And not only that, I can also...
And we still didn't give anything away.
And the best part about bubble wrap is, you know, when you get bored...
Yeah, entertainment value.
You got entertainment.
Entertainment value. Did we decide that the trailer was going to be good enough to play?
Yes, we did. Should we? Okay. Should you mention something real quick about what How to Kill a Zombie? I'll give the quick plot synopsis on our friends over at the Internet Movie Database. It is about Max Stone is trying to raise his son, Jesse, to be a survivalist and a real man. Jesse just wants to do his own thing in his own way. Can they somehow learn to see eye to eye during the zombie Holocaust, find some suitable mates, and save humanity? This is where I play the trailer.
This ain't a game, boy.
Guess I'm just a little bored.
You never know when something's gonna jump up and bite you in the ass.
Tell me what she was like again, Dad.
She was an angel. That's probably why I haven't killed you yet, you little bastard. Besides, not a lot of women would fit into our lifestyle. This crap will save your life someday.
I think I'm gonna whack out someday and bring a machine gun in my backpack.
You can sleep in the Jeep if you're scared.
Plastic windows, Dad! Plastic windows!
Zombies? Sweet!
Yes.
Yeah. So how many of us, let's be honest, how many of us, when the zombie apocalypse breaks out, we're going to say the same thing Jesse said?
Probably.
Zombies? Sweet.
At least right at the beginning. Then after about like a month, it's like, crap.
Yeah. Then I'd be like, come on. Still more zombies?
Like,
all right. So this
die?
One actually is, this one comes from Bill McLean, is actually become a really good friend of the Creepercast. I've enjoyed many a conversation with the Bill McLean played our Max Stone, which definitely sounds like a guy that can handle the zombie apocalypse.
Yes,
and
yes.
Probably take out Blade Runner in the process.
Yeah. What I love, you know, what's great about this film is you have to remember this film is a family affair. I mean,
oh yeah.
It stars Bill. and Ben McLean. It's directed by Tiffany McLean. It's, you know, Ben, Bill, and, you know, everyone, they all wrote it together. Tiffany, you know, they were all writers on this. I mean, this is like, they, this is a whole family.
Oh, yeah. This was a family affair.
Yes. And that's awesome. I love that. This film, I'm going to start off right now by saying, if you're looking for a scary zombie film, one, you're probably not going to find it anymore.
True.
And two, this definitely isn't it. If you're looking for an entertaining and hilarious zombie film that dives into every zombie trope that we have heard and does it in a nice tongue-in-cheek way and pays homage to everything, I swear, everything that came before it, this is your film.
Most definitely. I definitely, yes, this is a family affair. And I do really hope in the future, I mean, we're going to be talking to, in the next couple of days, we're going to be talking to Corey Norman, who did the next movie that we're talking about and is a huge part of the main community. But I think that the reason why I wanted to start off with How to Kill a Zombie is because it is what we have decided to call, and I understand the whole world is picking up on. You can blame us. I'm pretty sure we're the first people to call it a zombie-dy.
Yes, I think we were. But,
now everybody's calling them zombie-dies. In fact, when Bill first sent this, you know, to me, he was really, really concerned going, this isn't really a horror movie, but it does have zombies. it's more like a, you know, survival comedy with zombies. And I was like, no, that's great. We love zombie-dies. And he was like, wait, what did you just call it? That's a new one. I like that one. And I'm like, so yeah. Definitely a family affair, which is, to make a point, the main filming community. They are a family. All these people know each other. All these people have been working together. This is, I mean, everything is family run. When we get into Corey Norman, you're going to hear a lot about family with him as well. And this is a fun film. I mean, it, and like you said, it covers everything you have ever seen in any other zombie movie is there for all the, you know, it pays homage to everything great. The fact that it was written by Ben, and then, you know, obviously his father and his mother helped, you know, kind of perfect it and then decided to come out with this. And then I want to follow it all up with, I know we're going to, you know, tease a few other things, but at the same time, I want to follow it up with, I've been telling these guys ever since I got this movie, and you can see it in my review, I am waiting for my action figures. This thing is going to catch on.
That's, yeah. Well, I mean, and you're talking for such a, you know, think about this definite low budget film, family film. They probably sunk, you know, whatever savings they had into this film. It's got a 7.6 out of 10 on IMDb. Like, yeah. There's Hollywood films that aren't that high.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
and
it's so
this thing. Good. This thing was so good that it's you know, just in the time period from the time that it originally had its first showing, which was back in January, I believe, or maybe it was last year. But from the time it's had its first showing, it's already done limited theatrical runs all along the East Coast.
Yeah. And here's the thing. So when Jeff told me about the film and had me watch it, I started the film and I was, you know, the name in and of itself says comedy, says tongue in cheek. I mean, you know, what's the Simon Pegg movie?
Yeah, Shaun of the Dead.
Shaun of the Dead. I mean, it's in that realm, the title in and of itself. But this kind of also reminded me of like How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days or whatever them chick flicks are. But, you know, so anyway, so I'm watching this and the thing just, it's like a cold open and I'm watching the cold open and I'm watching the dialogue and, you know, definitely unnatural dialogue, you know, so I'm thinking, oh, great. This is, you know, this is going to be just, I'm going to have to like, you know, force myself to sit through this. Kid you not, within probably 5 to 10 minutes, I was laughing so hard at the dialogue because you realize that they wrote it specifically for to be bad dialogue.
Entirely aware.
Entirely aware that it's bad dialogue. Exactly. And that's the thing. And so, I mean, and, you know, and then the running gags throughout this, you know, with the dialogue that throw back to the beginning of it, you know, even the one-offs in there, the one-offs I think are the best.
Yeah.
The one-off jokes, like the one-liners out of nowhere, you know, somebody says something, you're like, what? That is the best. And then, I mean, talk about, like, what's his name? Is it Steve? The one with the spray bottle?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That whole thing, yeah.
I mean, they normally, you know, with a joke or something like that, you know, they may do it three or four times and then stop. You know, so you kind of get a little chuckle. With this one, it's like on South Park or on something, you know, where they hold for a pause and then they just keep holding. And holding until finally you start laughing because it's so obnoxiously long. That's what they did with Steve. I think that's his name. I can't remember. Oh, yep, I feel bad.
That was his name too.
Okay. And with the water bottle that, you know, by the end, I was dying. I'm like waiting for the water bottle.
Yeah, yeah, that's and then to find out just how important that water bottle is by the end of the film.
Yes,
which was also the great part of it. And I mean, this had all the characters that you would be looking for in, you know, trapped in a mall with zombies. when it comes down to it, one of the things that one of the reasons why I definitely wanted you to watch this is that we've done, you know, the whole zombie survival stuff, and the way the stones were, especially the way, you know, Max Stone was, is I was just like, Jason has to watch this movie because he's totally going to identify with this attitude. He's going to, you know, really get into, you know, the way Max Stone is and appreciate the humor associated, yes, the way they drive everything. And that's the main reason why I had to, you know, get you in on this, other than the fact that I just wanted another opportunity to talk about it. It's not like I've talked about it enough on the website. As far as I'm concerned, this is one that's definitely going to be hitting, you know, video at some point, and I am going to rave about it again. It is, it's amazing. And the good news is that I've actually been talking to Bill and they are working on a sequel.
Oh, sweet.
So, but I don't want to give away a lot of stuff. I just want people to truly understand how funny this movie is.
Talk to Bill. No, here, I'm putting this out on the air, on the virtual air, on the internet. I'm a survivalist. Everybody that knows me knows that. I had the Survival Prep podcast for a short time. I go out this summer. I'm actually taking some Boy Scouts out for a week-long survival backpacking trip. I was just asked last week. Bill, if you're listening, and you're making a sequel, I want a cameo as the crazy survivalist out in the woods, if you can write me in.
Which would be, it sounds perfect to me. I mean, and you're closer to Maine than I am, so you might be able to make it.
I can make it. I just drive right through Canada.
Yeah. And I want to go to Maine, of course, just because, you know, for a lot of reasons. And now I have a lot of good people to meet when I get there.
You know, again, but I've been to Maine.
Have you?
Yeah, I've never been. I had a friend that I worked at a summer camp.
I've always wanted an excuse to.
Yeah.
And now I think I have a few.
Yeah, I had a friend that worked at a summer camp with, and when summer camp was over, a bunch of us went back to his place in Maine, and one, we ate a lot of lobster, which was awesome, but two, we went backpacking through the mountains up there for about a week.
Which definitely looks like it'd be a lot of fun. Now, again, I keep saying, I don't want to give away a whole lot. I do think that there are, you know, a couple of teases that are worth mentioning. We've already mentioned bubble wrap. We haven't gone into it much extreme about that. And I know Bill will be listening, because as soon as he finds out we did this, he's going to have to hear what we said, because he, you know, he's one of those self-conscious guys. No, really, Bill, this movie's amazing.
It is.
I even explained to Jason, you know, just before we started talking, and that's the only reason why he hasn't mentioned it, is that, you know, the version that I had him watch was the one that without the corrected audio.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was something I was actually going to mention, that, like, once you get past, you know, some of the audio and some of the editing, you know, inconsistencies, you know, you will love this film. When I found out, you know, when Jeff told me that basically, you know, I had a first version screener, you know, it's like, oh, well, never mind.
In that case, it's probably perfect.
Anyway, yes. But, in that case, it jumps up like a whole number on my
And the whole reason why I didn't contact Bill and everybody from, you know, Freight Train Films to get a better version is because I wanted you to see it in a raw form. It's kind of like when we watched Tucker and Dale versus Evil. Did I have you watch the non-ADR version?
Yes.
Yeah. See, it was like, if you could still get a laugh without all that extra stuff in there, then you know it's a good movie.
Oh, so yeah.
Extra stuff, you know, the effects and the ADR, then, you know, it's fantastic. So the same thing happened to me with How to Kill a Zombie. Is the first time I watched it, I'm just like, this is a funny movie. I mean, it took me a little while to catch on. And then about 10, 15 minutes into it, I'm laughing. By the end of it, I'm rolling. And a couple of the things that made me roll did involve bubble wrap. And then
the well, other, and, the, and Ashley's what's her name? The actress Hannah that played Ashley in there, her reaction to just about everything, you know.
And then the other one that I said is like the first thing that I messaged Bill right after I watched the film is that I said what did he call it? Quadriplegic zombie? Or,
oh yes, the what was that?
They put it. The way they put it in the film was perfect.
The zombie coming down in the in the motorized.
Plegic, there we go.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, great, there's a zombie plegic. And I'm just like, I immediately texted him back going, zombie plegic needs to go on posters. I'm telling you.
I think one of my favorite lines, though, had to have come from Jesse, played by Bill's son, Ben, that, you know, they were basically all trying to figure out why the zombies came back. And Jesse spit out the exact line from Night of the Living Dead. Well, when there's no more room in hell, the dead walk the earth. And like, they like all but get slapped upside the head. Like, that's the stupidest thing I ever heard. I loved it.
So there you have it. A fantastic film that came out of Maine, Family Affair. They are actually tearing things up. Bill, if you want to look him up, is Bill McLean. He runs Freight Train Films with him and his wife handle Freight Train Films. Bill is one hell of an actor, does acting classes in Maine. If you're looking to, you know, be an actor, definitely look him up. How to Kill a Zombie 2 is supposed to be on its way. Definitely I'll be following these folks like, you know, well, the stalker that I am. And as soon as this thing comes out on DVD, don't be afraid, because I will let you know, because you will have to see this yourself. In the meantime, definitely check out the review on creepercast.com. Definitely check out and all the other stuff, because I've been following them for a while now.
All right. And with that. We've got another film coming out of Maine. What is it, Jeff?
Of Maine. Yes, we have the Hanover House, which is actually my first introduction to Maine. Well, not really my first. He had a couple of, Corey Norman had a couple of shorts that I had gotten my hands on first. But the Hanover House was his first feature that I was aware of. And it's you know, I really enjoyed the movie. I think Jason had a little reservations, but we're going to work this out with Corey when we talk to him in a couple of weeks. But anyway, the Hanover House is, I don't have all the information in front of me, but I can make it up from my memory if you'd like.
Yeah. Well, tell you what, why don't we go ahead and play the trailer?
All right.
Robert, your dad died last night. His funeral is being held this weekend at the Valley Funeral Home back in Hanover.
Sorry about your dad.
I'm so glad you're here.
If you love me, why do you just leave?
I don't know.
Who the hell do you think you are?
It was always him over me. You still don't get it. We won't be coming back.
What did he do to you?
Robert! Oh my God, Robert, what the hell did you do? Oh my God, little girl, are you okay? Robert, call 911.
There's a house up there. I'm gonna go get some help. Oh, please, sir, we have an injured little girl here.
Go away. There's nothing here for you, Robert.
Yeah. Robert!
Do you know what's going to happen?
Sure. Till death do us part.
I like that line. All right. So the Hanover House, it's written and directed by Corey Norman. Stars Brian Chamberlain, Casey Turner, and Annie Bobby. So help me out. Is this a ghost story?
I believe it is to a certain extent. I mean, we are okay. So I believe this film is a true homage to, you know, a great story and a great film that came from it. The two not necessarily related, other than that they have some of the same characters in the same storyline in it. But I believe the Hanover House is a wonderful homage to Kubrick's The Shining, along with an homage to The Shining, the book itself.
Right. And, I definitely saw The Shining in this, you know, with, you know, kind of the, and that's what I was wondering when I say, is it a ghost story? Because definitely there's ghosts in it, just like there is in The Shining. But the horror from The Shining doesn't necessarily come from the ghosts. It comes from Jack. And in this one, I couldn't tell if it was more of him kind of going down the same road as Jack was, or if he was possessed.
I don't see the possessed aspect of it at all myself in the film. Is that it's more of a he's seeing the ghosts that actually exist in the home, and not that he's necessarily being. Well, you might be right. There may be a possession actual level to it because they were trying to snap him out of it at some point.
Right.
You know, his wife was trying to snap him out of it. I just want to make a quick correction, though. I know that you know, all the credits out there say Corey Norman did pretty much everything, and I do believe he can do pretty much everything, but he definitely does have a partner in crime. His wife Haley does a lot of the writing as well. I know she's also been involved in like the makeup and all of that. So again, we get back to another family affair with this one. And he's also using folks that are, you know, within the main community. I want to say both, you know, Bill McLean and Corey Norman, one of their major focuses, even though I at this point even know that Bill has been offered opportunities in Los Angeles, but really want to help continue to build the main, you know, what's happening in Maine right now. And as these two movies kind of demonstrate, a lot is happening in Maine that we don't know anything about. And as soon as I found out about, I had to make sure everybody knew about. But the other thing is that the synopsis, you know, sorry, Corey, but the synopsis that's on IMDb really doesn't do the film justice. I mean, just by saying, I know that's why you were skipping over it, because I saw the way you just kind of like went past it. But the synopsis really doesn't do the film justice. This is in a huge way an homage to Stephen King's The Shining, both versions, the book and the movie and the film. I also think there's a lot more in it, and it's maybe because my memory isn't as good about the films that I remember seeing in this. And even in the review I wrote on the Creepercast, I know I didn't touch on this, but going back and thinking about it, I'm like, well, I totally forgot all about the dead person calling somebody on the phone thing, which I believe was a Twilight Zone episode. And there was also a film that involved a girl. Maybe that was like a Tales from the Crypt episode, actually. But a little girl talking to grandma on the phone. And, you know, so there's tons of callbacks to a lot of different things in this. And that's one thing that Norman, and as we've spoke of earlier, the McLeans are really good at, is, you know,
paying homage.
Callbacks.
Yeah.
Doing callbacks.
And the other thing with this house, or this house, this movie, is that it also brings up the question of, are you fated? Do you have a fate? You know, was he fated to end up at this house? Now, on IMDb, in the synopsis, it says yes. But is he really? You know, I mean, the whole thing starts off because of a funeral. They go to a funeral. He hits a girl. They take her to the house to try to save her, all that. And it looks like it's, fate that he ends up at this house, and that he was going to end up there no matter what. And I like the play that they used with that of, you know, is this really something, would he have ended up there no matter what? Or is it more of, you know, that these demons, shall we call them, these ghosts, these demons of him followed him to that house?
Which is a great example, because we have no reason to believe that particular house would harbor his demons and his demons only. It looks as if it, as if the house is just looking for whatever demons,
right,
is, you know, that that bothers you. Just like the whole idea of the fact that he, you know, he hit a little girl and that's what started him on this path, is that I would say that maybe there was fate involved in it from the standpoint of that the house already knew what it wanted. It wanted him.
Right.
Because he had already demonstrated the everything that the house may have needed at that point, and then used whatever would affect him in order to get him there to do the things he needed to do.
Right. And that, and that's why I like your homage to The Shining, because The Shining does it a completely different way. The ghosts, the demons at the hotel are there no matter who is there.
Right.
They don't change. They're the same. The two little girls are always the two little girls. The bartender is always the bartender. In this case, it's his own demons that are there. It's what it's what affects him the most. And that's where, you know, it kind of brings up this question of, were they all stood there waiting for him and he was fated to go there because they were all waiting for him there? Or does it, are these demons always around him and the house kind of amplifies them and allows them to become corporeal, kind of? Or is it that the house can summon, you know, whatever is going to affect the person the most?
That's, I think the last two are actually, you know, can run concurrently, is that he, because we learn in the beginning of the film, all the way through the funeral and everything, that he already has demons.
Yes.
And, you know, between the interaction between him and his wife, we know that he is constantly battling those demons and at the same time creating demons of his own. I mean, it's because of the attitudes that he's developed, thanks to the way his father raised him and everything. And I wanted to, you know, I want to get to the character, to the actors a little bit, because I, you know, the story and everything is obviously important.
But, I know. I'm so fixated on the story that.
Yeah. And I just wanted, you know, while we're talking about the story though, it's like, you know, there was a couple of actors that I felt kind of, you know, went a little flat for me, and it was mostly because maybe it was because of the you know, the whole uncomfortable, I think that's really what it was, is that they were trying to make us feel as uncomfortable as he did with the whole situation. And, you know, that his wife did with the whole situation. But I want to say that Brian Chamberlain, who was our main character, Robert Foster, did a fantastic job, a fantastic switch to, you know, even in this character, you know, it wasn't a Kubrick switch. It was a switch. I mean, he didn't go full on Johnny's back, you know, Johnny's here, but he was really there.
And I
also want to give out, you know, a lot of kudos to like Casey Turner as his wife. You know, at first I wasn't sure I liked her. And then when the demons actually hit her, it was just kind of like, whoa. And then I'll throw out Ann Bobby, because we all remember her from I can't remember the name of the film right now, but the Clive Barker film. You're not going to help. Okay.
Sorry. I'm trying to see where you're going with this. The Clive Barker film.
She
the
was
only
in
thing
Nightbreed. She was in
okay. Nightbreed. You're saying Clive Barker and I'm thinking Hellraiser.
Yeah, exactly. The first thing that pops into your head, Hellraiser.
Yeah. And but, I can't get it out of my head. Nightbreed. I mean, yes. I do know Nightbreed. Yes.
Yeah. And she was our main female in Nightbreed. And, you know, it was just one of those things where you're looking at the, okay, so we threw in a little bit of star power. That's good. That's great. But really the people who drove this movie was Daniel Noel, who played Jim Foster, Robert's father. Brian Chamberlain's acting, you know, as Robert Foster. And, I don't know the guy's name, because I can't remember exactly, you know, what the name of his character was supposed to be, but the Amityville character,
yeah,
you know, that guy was just like, wow, he's pulling off a creepy. In fact, if they ever remade Amityville, I would, you know, vote him in to play the next dude for that. But all in all, I thought there was a lot about this movie that I enjoyed. I liked the playing with the phone, which was, I know, was a callback. I liked the whole radio part, because they made a big deal out of the radio. The so-called possession that we couldn't tell for sure if it was a possession or not. I enjoyed that, because I didn't want to know for sure. I mean, by that point, I felt that he was both possessed and that person.
Yeah.
Because it was the person that he always, you know, that as we learn in the film, he didn't want to be.
Yeah, that he was fighting right from the beginning.
Yeah. So he was basically possessed by a personality that existed already within him. And then the twist that went, that happened with his wife, I thought was really good. And then of course, you know, I don't like to give away, you know, too many of the twists, but this had that feel of when we say fated, and whether or not he was fated, by the end of the film, it does feel like fate. I mean, The Shining.
Yeah. And that's exactly where, you know, like I say, the story, I agree with everything you said. I think for me, those were all the main positives. The storyline is amazing. I think this storyline, I would love to see a second one with a different group of people that kind of, delves in more into the demon, you know, or supernatural aspect of it to find out. Because to me, it's kind of like Sinister. Is it, you know, where you want to dive in more into backstory of what it is, not just so the first one sets up with the family and, you know, what the demons or ghosts or whatever are able to do, but then dive in a little bit deeper in a second one and, you know, find out more about whether it has something to do with the house, you know, because they do show bones hanging. So it kind of makes you wonder if there's an occult part of it, or, you know, they do show stuff that makes you wonder, is it the house like in Amityville? Is it the person? Is it circumstances? Like, what is it? Could this happen at any house, or does it specifically have to be at this house?
That's excellent the way you put that. I mean, it doesn't, I was happy with not knowing, but it does kind of push you into that realm of maybe we need a Ghost Hunters episode. Because it's given us that, you know, enough to where we're just like, well, wait a minute. Is it? And I do think I asked myself some of those same questions afterwards was, is the house possessed? Is the house evil? Right. Is it sitting on the pathway to hell? You know, what is going on with this, with the house?
Was there some hoodoo that was happening there in the past that opened stuff up? Was it, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
that a sequel is not only something that we hope would happen. It's kind of like we're saying, and maybe we'll even tell Corey when we talk to him in a couple of weeks, is, you know, it's like, dude, we got to know more.
Yeah, exactly. Now, you know, as we mentioned, you know, I was keen on this film to a certain point, because I think the storyline, certainly some of the acting was great. Brian Chamberlain, the directing, I think, and the cinematography was great. The directing and the editing was good. I think what kind of threw me off were some of the beats between some of the actors, in that they were given really good lines, but the lines themselves or the action kind of fell flat.
Right. And I think that's what I was kind of saying with the fell flat part of it is, but again, I kind of attribute it to it where most of it happened was during the funeral.
Right. Yeah.
And I kind of attribute it to the whole idea that, you know, Brian had been away, you know, I mean, I'm sorry, Robert, his character had been away from all of this for a long time. And he's basically coming back and having to deal with people he hasn't seen in, you know, 10 years or so. And the awkwardness that would be associated with that and, you know, right, with that particular thing. So I attributed it more to that.
See, and I think where I had a hard time is that set the tone for me for the rest of the film. That I think, had that part been a little bit stronger, I wouldn't have had to struggle to get into the rest of the film, the story. Because what really happened with me is I started thinking more and more about the story after the film was over. And then that's when I started contemplating the ramifications of things and the supernatural and all of that. I think it was because of the beats at the beginning, and you're right. It really, most of it had to do with at the funeral, or leading up to the funeral, actually, not just at the funeral. And, because that kind of set the tone, that's what made it. I think if you're going to watch this film, definitely, you know, it's got another 7.6 out of 10 rating, which is great for a film on IMDb.
It's been killing it film festivals.
I would easily, you know, on our scale here, give this 3.5-4 stars. But that's only in retrospect after watching it and thinking about it. While I was watching it, I had reservations because it was like right at the beginning, I was taken out of the film. I wasn't sucked in, and I had a hard time getting past that.
Yeah, and I actually do kind of understand that, and I think it was because I gave it a second viewing that that's when I came to the realization that, you know, it was based on the awkwardness related to the funeral scene, which I totally felt was reasonable.
Yeah.
And then but when you get to the, you know, once he hits the girl and all of that starts it's like nonstop assault.
Yeah, exactly. And I think from the, you know, where the driving part of the film, you know, once he hits the girl on, this is easily a 5 out of 5 film. The directing is solid. The acting is, for the most part, solid. Being that many of these actors are, you know, semi-professional or not professional.
yeah.
You know, we're not talking.
Again, a family affair.
It's a family affair. Yes. You can't expect Hollywood, you know, auditions coming, you know, for these parts. But, and then on top of that, you know, the storyline and the dialogue that drove it from that point forward was just amazing. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think I would love to see a sequel that starts off right in the house, have a cold open in the house and suck me right in. And then,
oh, I like that. Actually, that actually makes a lot of sense too. Yeah.
You know, and this is just the editor in me. I'm not going to try to re-edit somebody else's film. This is not my film. This is, you know, this is Corey's film. If I was editing this film, though, I would have cold opened it right with that car scene first. Because I think that would have sucked me right in right away. And then jump back to, you know, 24 hours before.
Right. Yeah, no, I hear you. And hopefully Corey doesn't take offense when we talk. No, I'm sure he won't. No, it's like, and the whole point of actually talking about these two movies and the one we're going to talk about next week, which was actually an anthology, is, you know, to talk about what's coming out of Maine, the type of talent that we're seeing. And
it's such films talent.
Like the Hanover, yeah, the stuff like the Hanover House is actually like, it's an amazing amount of talent you wouldn't expect.
Right.
And I think that's what's blowing my mind. And all these people are friends. All these people know each other. All these people hang out. Corey himself, like I said, we're going to talk to you. We'll get into some of the things. I mean, I believe he teaches film. I know he's done several shorts that I've already reviewed. We're going to talk about one of them next week that's involved in Damnation Land. He's been involved in a lot of the film movement that's going on there. I mean, the Hanover House and How to Kill a Zombie actually was supposed to play at a film festival that ended up getting canceled due to, you know, some legal issues involved with the person who was going to set up the film festival. So they set it up. So they basically changed it all up, took over a drive-in for a weekend.
Oh, and, that's awesome.
And they called it Dead at the Drive-In. And it had a couple of shorts and How to Kill a Zombie and Hanover House all play there. And I was, of course, invited, but there was just no way that I was going to make it.
Yeah, you can drive across the entire country.
For that weekend. And then from that point on, it's like the Hanover House has been, you know, tearing up festivals and everything like that. And you know, when this one comes out on DVD, you'll definitely hear from me, and we are going to talk to Corey about that in a couple of weeks. Next week, though, we are going to talk about Damnation Land, which is another thing that you know, another part of the main film, you know, horror film community that Corey is a huge member of. And basically what that is that they get all the filmmakers in the community to do these shorts that they throw into an anthology series, and then they'll kick back and then they kick back and force everybody to watch it. And it's a really awesome idea. You got a lot of great filmmakers, more than just Corey and the McLeans. And that's about all I got. So I think we're about ready to wrap this up. So I do want to thank everybody for joining us here on the Creepercast. And remember, you can read the reviews. You can even find the podcast. You can send us messages and everything you could possibly think of to at creepercast.com. You can also read our friend Joel's reviews. And he's getting really good at those. And I'm really enjoying seeing him sending them over to us. And I know there's phone numbers and everything that Jason can tell you as well.
All right. That's right. Thank you, Jeff. Yeah, phone number, don't forget, get a hold of us by giving us a call at 503-454-6941. That's 503-454-6941 to get a hold of the CreeperCast. Don't forget to email us at feedback@creepercast.com. Jeff will answer all of your emails in his underwear. And don't forget to head over to creepercast.com, like Jeff mentioned, to get everything CreeperCast related, including reviews, merchandise, and podcasts. All right. See you guys next week.